Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CoinPass podcast. We talk about crypto, blockchain, trading, and everything fintech. And today we have a really special topic with a good friend of mine, Hugo from Minimum. We're talking about real blockchain adoption and not that isn't just about crypto. A little bit about Minimum. They're the world's first truly decentralized blockchain protocol based entirely on mobile phones. It's a base layer protocol launched in 2018. And it's been designed to remain completely decentralized with no rulers, no miners, and an indefinitely growing database. Hugo's an entrepreneur at heart. He's with over two decades experience in marketing and communications. He's run and founded world-leading advertising agencies, created global campaigns for companies including Vodafone, Toshiba, and Sony Electronics. And Hugo, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be here. Great to see you.
And first of all, just tell us a little bit about what Minimum actually is and what you guys are aiming to achieve and what's the real, you know, the base layer problem that you guys want to solve.
Cool. Yeah, thank you. I mean, I guess what we've done really is take the best and most useful elements of Bitcoin and Ethereum and re-engineered them to run in full on mobile phones. So we've taken the proof of work consensus and the decentralized consensus mechanism from Bitcoin and included smart contracts and tokenization from Ethereum. But what we've done is we've removed the financial incentives to secure the chain. So instead of miners competing in their factories to secure the chain and earn a fee, Minima and all their users are equal. And so they can run a full node on their phone and they're mining their transactions rather than the blocks. And so this will effectively create the most decentralized blockchain protocol in existence. And so, yeah, that's what we're looking to do. So everyone will run a full complete node on their phone.
Wow. And it's definitely different from the traditional things we've seen, proof of work, proof of stake. That conversation will probably keep going on forever. But what you kind of, in the essence, say, you're saying that, like, you know, the fee-based model that we have now, either isn't scalable or doesn't work, and you've got a completely different concept around that.
Yeah, I mean, it's our premise that the fee-based model and incentives will always lead to centralization. So there'll always be economies of scale leading to huge mining pools. I mean, back in the day, so my co-founder, Paddy, was mining Bitcoin back in the day in 2012, He was doing it on his computer, but he got frustrated by seeing the fact that he could no longer do it as the mining pools started building up. And so what he wanted to do was set up a protocol, create a protocol where every user is equal. And in order to do that, you have to take away the financial incentives to do that. Otherwise, it always leads to centralization. And so that's why we're looking to create the most decentralized network as a result of that.
And we talk about decentralized network and value there at the same time. I mean, do you believe that there's more value in, I suppose, the age of a chain or the strength of a chain or the level of decentralization, or I suppose the more people that are using it as sort of a payment system?
I mean, I think the thing about a proof of work chain is that it gets more and more secure and more powerful the more people that use it. And then therefore, the more people that use it, they'll put more value on it. So then overall, the value of the chain will go up as a result of that. So it's very much our premise that the base layer protocol needs to be a proof of work chain. So there's external commodity in terms of the work that's being done to add security to the chain.
Mm. And I suppose on that, I mean, we're talking about a protocol level here, not necessarily a token. I mean, is Minima a protocol or is Minima a token?
Minima is a protocol. I mean, it has coins on the protocol, and these coins, much like Bitcoin's colored coins, can be turned into tokens. So we can have a coin economy, and then we have a tokenization economy as well on that. And so the way that works is that we have the base layer chain is proof of work, and then we have side chains, which will be POS chains effectively. So enterprises can create a whole token economy on the side, but secured by the proof of work chain as a base layer.
Right. Okay. Wow. And I suppose with that, how does the average person, I suppose, benefit from this the most? Is it to get an exposure to crypto? Is it to be more of a part of a digital nomad or an unbanked economy? Like, what's the main use case?
Yeah. I mean, our aim is to drive a mass adoption, and the whole point will be that actually this will be as simple as downloading an app from the app store to be able to run a complete node. And whether or not they're doing it as a minima facing product, or actually might well be as a an application attached to another application from, say, a telecom company or something like that, a telco. And so they won't actually necessarily be know that they're running it. So the incentive to run it is not that either they're going to think they're going to earn a fee from running the node, or that they wake up in the morning and think, actually, you know, what I want to do is help create a decentralized world. It's actually they'll be doing it for the utility of it. So we are working with a number of enterprise at the moment to help them adopt it, to create cost efficiencies and flexibility. So then users will only be running it because it's useful to them, not because they get paid a fee, because then you go back to the original point about fees create centralization, create monopolies in that respect. So it's all about the utility of the chain.
And you mentioned telcos there just for a moment as well. I mean, what's in it, I suppose, for the telco or for the big enterprises? What's in it for them?
So, yeah, I mean, the reason why I've been approaching them, obviously, because we need lots of users and we need lots of users with mobile phones. From their perspective, you know, the telecoms industry has been, you know, runs, 25, 30 year old legacy systems for their for billing and everything like that, and these are sort of, you know, they've managed to sort of stick it together up until this point. But in terms of looking at the number of devices, both IoT and mobile phones sort of joining the network, it's not something that is easily scalable. So if you run a minimum node on the customer's phone and through the telco, then you create a direct transactional link between the two, which creates huge efficiencies, cost efficiencies, and speed and security as well. So they're looking to sort of almost revamp their back-end systems to interact with the increasing number of users they have on the network, plus also the type of products that they want to sell. This is create having a smart contract, being able to deliver the new propositions to customers, means that it's much faster and much quicker and much more flexible.
And is that in your kind of traditional kind of centralized hub and spoke from the telco's perspective, like kind of a hub and spoke, or of all of these mobile phones kind of interacting on a peer-to-peer level as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So every phone effectively becomes a mini server. So and so not only does that make it much more resilient, but it also makes it much more it's, you know, the back end work that needs to be done from the telco side is reduced as well. So you don't have to create huge new systems in the back end. You actually just have minima running, and then you can create that transactional link. So it should in many ways simplify everything. I mean, what we're finding interestingly is that you know, the markets that are the most interested in this at the moment are the developing markets, because they have sort of less commitment to the legacy systems of the past. You know, M-Pesa was a huge sort of step forward in Kenya, and I think that we're finding that telecoms in Africa are looking to find ways to find the next version of M-Pesa, and Minima is, you know, right up there on their list.
Great. And you know, what are the, I suppose you're talking about, you know, connecting the telco to the client, to the customers, and having that kind of full node, and talking about protocol and base layer, essentially to have, you know, very secure, very scalable, whether it's, you know, payments, applications, etc. Do they have their own ideas on what they want to roll out on these now, you know, kind of hyper networks? Is it, you know, specific, not ad-based applications, but is there something around medicine? Is it something around government? Is it around voting? Is it around KYC and ID? Like, what's kind of the biggest use cases you've seen specifically for that sort of stuff?
I mean, I think, you know, each operator has their own sort of specific agenda, but I think, you know, the beauty of having a base layer blockchain that has sort of tokenization can means that there's all potential use cases are out there. So, you know, the initial ones in terms of having a wallet to be able to transact value, whether that is cash or whether that is Data, for example, is a key one. But then, yeah, definitely moving into healthcare, obviously, you know, the pandemic is accelerating everyone's ideas around sort of self-sovereign identity and track and trace and everything like that. And obviously IoT is a huge one as well. And I think that the telcos are seeing this as an opportunity to be sort of front and center of those relationships rather than just being dumb pipes that sort of are losing their margin and losing their control over everything. So this is a good way to do that.
Essentially avoids being a Blockbuster or a Kodak, you know, being the, you know, the,
yeah,
the biggest name in the industry for a very long time and almost defining the industry for a very long time, only to be overtaken and overshadowed for not pivoting quick enough. So they do have a massive opportunity because, let's face it, everyone has a phone. I've got two of them sitting on my desk right now. And, you know, while we, I suppose, almost attached at the hip, is that a lot of our lives, you know, circle through these, you know, through these devices now. I don't really know what the next iteration of that tech looks like, whether it's something in print, whether it's something out of Total Recall where you put your hand up on the glass, or, but there's always going to be some form of that getting upgraded to do more, I suppose, real world interaction and more secure, because everything on your phone is very, very personal, right? And I think if you have the ability to take that one step further, to not just be more secure, but to do, you know, your self-sovereign ID, to have your medical records, to have, you know, the ability to vote, all of those things that a lot of people in the developed world probably take for granted, but having that even more secure and less sustainable to data leakage, I think is really important. And I think the telcos can really take that opportunity to do something cool with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, an interesting, you know, in order to create a protocol, a blockchain that could run in full on a mobile phone, what we did instead of everyone keeping the ledger, as you have at the moment with a huge ledger for Bitcoin and Ethereum, which obviously is continuing to grow, instead of that, everyone keeps the spine of the ledger and then they keep their own data themselves. So I keep my data on my phone, you keep your data on your phone, and no one else is shared with no one else. Because in order to have that reaction interaction, all you need to do is know what your totals are and what mine are. I don't need to see yours, basically. And I think that's a very important evolution, and it's also one obviously that will keep us on the right side of GDPR as well, and so it's about keeping your own data, and I think this plays very nicely into the self-sovereign concept. You know, and each operator that we talk to has a different agenda, but underlying about everyone keeping their own data and being flexible. And I think, you know, the C-suites that we talk to are, you know, very interested in customer retention and customer life cycles, and they know that customers want to have flexibility. They know that customers want to be sort of in control of their data and in control of what they're doing, and this our approach enables that.
And I suppose, yeah, I can't remember the term you just said right now, just keep me on a little bit. We're talking about, you know, infrastructure level, which is very bottom down. So maybe the way that you've conceptualized it, the way that it's pitched, the way that it's designed, it sounds like a very bottom up infrastructure instead of any sort of top down investment that we've traditionally seen in the crypto market. Is that kind of the aim that you're going for?
I mean, I guess, you know, we have been raising, you know, funds privately at the moment. I mean, I think that, you know, we launched at the back end of 2018. Many people asked us why we didn't launch at the beginning of 2018. And, you know, the answer to that is that we weren't ready and we were doing it for the right reasons. So we've been sort of building it up traditionally. And what we're looking to do is, as I say, our launch will come hopefully through interactions with the telcos, who will actually be putting the nodes onto people's phones as a, you know, as a new solution for them to get more flexible and cheaper tariffs. And people will be loading it, you know, so everyone will be loading it on their phones without even realizing. And so this is something, I think, where, you know, mass adoption is not going to come from people deciding that they want to become part of a decentralized network. It's almost become part because it just is more useful and makes their life more fulfilled. And that, I think, is the way that we'll get mass adoption, rather than try and do it, slowly but surely, and try and create some kind of, philosophical movement. Obviously, we have lots of, you know, we have lots of supporters who have sort of very high, philosophical views on this, which is what we are adhering to. But we also know that the vast majority of people are not waiting for this. And so we need to make it as easy and acceptable for them to benefit from it. And as soon as they benefit from it, then they'll accept it. And then we're then off and running, if that makes sense.
And is, when you say telco level, is that like Apple, Samsung level, or is it like EE and Vodafone level?
I mean, at the moment, this is mainly at the network operator. So this is the sort of the operators on that. I mean, the way that the protocol has been created is that it will effectively be a simple app download. We have our APK coming out for test very soon, and that effectively will be able to run on Android devices, and then obviously, with iOS as a solution to follow.
Excellent. Yeah, the iOS one might be a little bit trickier to tackle. It's just that's just my prediction,
but yep,
I'm sure you guys
absolutely.
And I just want to rattle off just a few quotes here. It's something we talked about a little while ago, one of our networking meetings, and just kind of get your view, I suppose, while we kind of get to towards the end of the show. Miners are incentivized to centralize.
Yeah. So I mean, again, this is the point. So effectively, if you can buy a bigger computer to do faster mining than anyone else, then you will do that. And so what that now means is that 65% of the network is secured by sort of six mining pools in China. So we've effectively moved from the centralized nature of Wall Street to the centralized nature of six mining pools in China. So we've just moved the problem around, and that's a big that's the big challenge that we've looked to remove by creating everyone being effectively mining their own transactions.
And I suppose it's going to be quite difficult to change that if you think about it from almost a carbon footprint, from an investment point of view, from a lot of the different aspects, is that they have an edge when it comes to, they've got a huge amount of renewable power. It can have a very green movement over time. Obviously, the Bitcoin energy usage is a whole other conversation altogether.
Yeah. I'm
probably going to cover in my next podcast with a UK crypto miner. But they have an edge because they get a lot of subsidies from hydro, which is a lot of in China. A lot of other mining pools are up and coming in other parts of the world, whether it's up in Iceland or parts of Canada or parts of the US, where they get subsidized energy. But the other taxes and other tariffs and other forms of control, it's almost they're so far behind now. And so I don't know if that narrative of breakaway from six pools in China, which could all be working together for all we know. They may have the ruse of six different mining pools, but it could effectively be two for all we know.
Yeah, and I think it would become more and more centralized. I mean, I think who knows? I mean, it's then becomes, the big challenge is then a state level attack, because, Bitcoin is still a minnow in the global scheme of things. Once it suddenly becomes more value, and I'm confident that it will do, it would take a state level attack to then sort of decide to coerce the miners into doing what they wanted to do, and mining empty blocks. The difference we have with Minima, for example, is that everyone is a miner. Everyone effectively is mining their own transactions, and the processing power that we have on the phones is no greater than a normal messaging app. And once phones are have the ability to charge their batteries up through ambient light and solar light, then effectively you have a completely sustainable system on that.
I think that's definitely the next breakthrough is definitely on battery power. If anything, I think phones are just fine how they are. I've still got an iPhone 7, I think. I don't even know the number. It still works just fine for the last three or four years, but it's definitely the batteries that get a lot of people down. So having that not only effective battery source, but the renewable source of it charging off on its own, or taking very little to charge it, will definitely kind of leap that kind of forward. The internet was built for informational transactions. Blockchain is the internet for value transactions.
So I mean, again, this is definitely where we're heading. I mean, until now, information, if you take email, for example, I mean, if I sent you something on email, I could also send it to someone else and you could then share it and I could then share it with other people as well. So that effectively doesn't have any value intrinsically. Obviously, blockchain was the ability to, I send you something online it's definitely yours. Everyone sees the fact that it's yours and it's no longer mine. I mean, that's what has been, the essence of blockchain. And effectively, we're looking to, once we have mobile phone, once everyone has it in their pocket running that, it means that, I can pick up and transfer something to you without intermediaries, just at a flick of a button or a touch of a screen, I should say. That's the layer that we're looking to create. And it has to be completely and utterly decentralized, like the internet. So the first layer of the internet for interface was for information transfer. The second layer has to be as open and as decentralized as that, and that is what we are building with Minima, because that is something where no one is in charge and everyone doesn't have to trust anyone. And that's the base layer protocol through proof of work. Side chains like websites effectively can then sort of sit on top, and so that's what we're looking to build on top.
Awesome. And I think that's a really, really good spot to kind of, I suppose, to tie a nice little bow on the podcast today, because I know I personally could talk about this for the rest of the day, which you may or may not have time for. I think the future is definitely bright. I think it's definitely going in that one direction, whether it's a very narrow stream or quickly becoming a very open fjord. The need for security, the need for self-sovereign identity, the need for having your own assets, not only for your own protection, but for security purposes, basically. The idea isn't to make everybody their own bank. The idea is so everyone can, I suppose, communicate effectively, communicate securely, and not be open to fraud. And I think as soon as we get over those kind of barriers, using a blockchain tech as an infrastructure and as a protocol, not necessarily as a cryptocurrency, I think it'd be really, really great. So thank you very much for coming on the show today, Hugo. It's great having you. Any last words on kind of what you're doing, what you're working on, and what's next for Minima, and how people can get in touch?
Thank you for having me on. I think we have a Telegram group, and we're on Twitter. I mean, hopefully we've got all of those are links there. We'll be having some, exciting announcements about funding and about our enterprise adoption in the coming months. So yeah, please stay tuned.
Is it going to be UK based or more global?
Global. I mean, global, on a global scale, definitely.
Great. Thank you very much, Hugo. Thanks for being a guest. If you may want to be a guest on the show in the future, you want to talk about trading, crypto, fintech, drop us a tweet at CoinPass Global. Send us an email, podcast@coinpass.com. And I want to thank you again, Hugo, my guest, for being on the show today. Please take care, be safe, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you. Thanks, Jeff. Bye-bye.